not just a process bhakti yoga is a process of yoga
but the word bhakti itself means unconditional, unmotivated, uninterrupted
love.
Bhakti is the inherent nature of the soul. It's not the type of affection that we experience in this world. The loving relationships of this world, it describes in the Vedas, has its origin and its ultimate fulfillment in the awakening of the soul's love for the Supreme Being. Describes in the Bhagavad Purana that just as when we put water on the root of a tree, that water extends to every part of the tree, the branches and the leaves and the flowers. Similarly, when that love awakens in our heart for the supreme origin of everything and everyone, then our love extends unconditionally. All of creation and all of living beings within creation and beyond creation. Sabai pung sarvaparo dharmo yato bhaktir hokshaje ahoitiki aprati hata yagatma suprasi. This beautiful verse, the word bhakti is defined. Sabai pung sarvaparo dharmo. The supreme dharma, the supreme religion, the supreme occupation, the supreme spiritual path, the supreme identity. Dharma has all those meanings. Is sabai pung sang paro dharma yato bhaktir ahokshaje. Ahokshaje is the supreme being who is inconceivable and unlimited. And bhakti means love the Supreme Being. And the expression of love is to serve. It's like we see these little children in the back, and mothers are very eager to serve them. That's a mother's love, to serve the child. And what does the child give in return? Now, Swamis have our own observations. From our perspective, the child is kicking and screaming and sometimes vomiting and passing stool and urine on the mother, and the mother's just serving, trying to make the child happy. That's quite unconditional love. In any relationship, the quality of love is how unselfish it is, how it's really focused on the welfare of the object of love, the pleasure of the object of love. So the supreme dharma, it is explained, is such loving service to the supreme. And it says, ahoyitaki apratihata. The quality of true love, it is unmotivated by selfishness, unmotivated by egoism, unmotivated by illusion, unmotivated by passionate lust or greed or envy or anger. And it's uninterrupted by circumstances. Because we'll always be tested. If love is extended when things are very favorable and pleasing, that's a very shallow type of love. Deep love is, whether it's a sunny day, type of love of God and compassion to others is the only experience that actually satisfies the self. So bhakti is that love, the inherent nature of the soul. And the love we're speaking about, although it may seem very elevated and very impossible, it's actually our nature. It's who we are. It's inseparable from our existence. But somehow or other, sometimes we forget it because we're distracted by so many other diversions, alternatives. So bhakti yoga is the yoga that reconnects us, the path that reconnects us to that inherent, essential love that's within us. It's who we are. And Bhakti Fest means a festival of that love. A time when we celebrate. Now in the world today, and it's kind of like that always, there's so many problems, so many conflicts, so many atrocities, so many abuses, so much suffering. And if we look at history, I don't think there's ever been a time in our modern world when it wasn't like that somewhere, somehow, sometimes. Some kind of wars. Strife. Droughts. Just recently, a few weeks ago, about 40 people came from Nepal to visit me in Mumbai. And we all have heard about the recent earthquake. So these people who came to see me, they were telling me stories that are both depressing and inspiring, that are both sad and blissful. I guess that's the way the world is. When this earthquake struck, thousands and thousands of people were killed. And tens of thousands had broken limbs. Hundreds and thousands lost their homes, family members. And when you lose your home in Nepal, none of those people have property insurance or life insurance or any type of insurance. I asked one of them, is there any kind of insurance in Nepal? They said, only God's name. The insurance. But they were talking about how some of these people, some of them, they lost their homes, they lost their livelihood, they lost so many, practically everything materially in their life, but they saw other people suffering. And our Bhaktivedanta hospital went there to bring a lot of food and a lot of, you know, medical care and also spiritual care, especially, because that's what they want the most. You can fix a person's broken leg, but if their house is broken and their family is dead, that's not going to make them very happy. But if you give a person enlightenment about the nature of the soul and what you can do for the souls of others, that really gives hope and it gives purpose and it gives meaning and happiness to life, even in the most difficult times. So those people were so inspired. They were going house to house with the doctors, fixing other people and feeding people and inspiring people, having kirtan with people. And they told me how blissful they were. The joy of giving. And nothing in this world could take that away from us. They were telling me what a joy it was to give. And because they knew what it was like to suffer like them, because they were like that, that gave them even more joy to help them out of it. And every person said, in helping other people out of their suffering, we didn't suffer anymore. When we gave up our own identification and were thinking about other people's needs, we became liberated from our own problems. And to help the body, to help the mind, and to help the outer soul is the highest, most complete way of offering our love, our compassion. So together, when they were actually having the most meaningful experience of their life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one great saint, said where there's the greatest need, there's the greatest opportunity to serve. And when there's great opportunities to serve, there's great opportunities to actually realize what real love is. And in the world today, there's so much necessity in the rich and the poor, in the good weather and the bad weather. I was just at the Kumbh Mela last week, and it was 1.5 million people in 105 degree weather, and it was pouring rain. And everyone was so happy. I was thinking, this is a Bhakti Fest. Rains, be happy. And if it's 110 degrees, be happy. Because if our happiness is determined by these external circumstances, then it's very shallow and superficial. But whatever the situation is, when we actually seek our happiness within ourselves and how we extend that, then it becomes beauty. This is where we celebrate the love of our souls, and we share it with each other. And as a family, we try to share it with the whole world. That is what we are called upon to do. Association with like-minded people who are really seeking a spiritual focus is the greatest blessing. I often give the analogy of the redwood trees. I say it a lot. Every time I tell the story, I learn more about the message. May I tell you? I'm going to end with this story, and then we'll have little kirtan. I know it's late. But in Bhakti Fest, I don't know what's late anymore. How many raise your hands. Your woods is a redwood forest. And a few years ago, I was walking with one of my friends, and the purpose of our walk was just to be alone in the silence and the seclusion of the forest. So as we were walking, we saw a large group of Chinese tourists. And there was an American park ranger in the middle speaking to them. So we had to pass by them to get deeper into the forest. So I was thinking, and I told him, let's go real fast, because we didn't come here to be with tourists. Doesn't matter where they're from, you know. All respects to tourists, but it's not where we want to be. We want seclusion. So as we were walking by, quickening our steps, I heard the park ranger say, I'm going to tell you the underground secrets of the redwood forest. Now, you know how you can take a fire and put it out and then put ashes over it? I used to live in caves with yogis, and some of these yogis, they're really amazing. They make a holy fire. And then they cover the burning coals with ashes for a whole day. And then they'll just take a stick and go and just push the ashes around, and then the fire comes up. Have you seen that? Well, you know, some of our burning interests of the past are kind of covered with ashes. The '60s, the counterculture, the hippie movement. We were revolutionaries, and we were really into underground secrets. So Wendy, he said the underground secret. I said, stop, I want to hear this. I was explaining the redwood trees. It's mountainous, it's hilly, the soil is really loose, and over the centuries there have been massive, devastating earthquakes, windstorms, blizzards, torrential rains. And I said, usually for a tree like this, the roots have to be really, really deep. But the roots of the redwood trees do not grow deep. How do they stand all these massive storms? They keep growing. Then he was silent, and everyone was trying to figure it out. Waiting for him to tell us. He said, the underground secret of the redwood forest is the roots. Even though they're shallow, they don't grow down, they grow outward, underground. Each root searches the root of another redwood tree. And as soon as they come together, around each other, intertwine, and make a permanent knot, a bond. And practically every root is connecting with the root of another tree. And directly and indirectly, every tree in the forest is connected with all the other trees. And even a little tiny new redwood tree whose roots are really thin and vulnerable, these gigantic, massive roots of the older trees let it wrap around and get full support from it. United we stand, divided we fall. That's the philosophy of the redwood forest. They're all there for each other. Because they understand what they have in common. There may be so many differences. And we keep growing. Even in the blizzards. And in the windstorms and in the earthquakes, they keep growing together. And that's a lesson to humanity. We all have so many differences. We have different upbringings, we have different conditionings, we have different tastes, we have different colors, we have different sexes, we have different social backgrounds, we have different educations, we have different nationalities, we have different religions, we have different species. The Bhagavad Gita tells, Vidyavanaya Sampane Brahmani Kavihastini Suni Chaiva Svabhagya Pandita Samadari. True wisdom is the capacity to see the equality in all beings. Whether we're white or black or red or brown or yellow, or whether we're male or female or Eastern or Western or from one religion or another religion or no religion, or whether we're humans or cows or dogs or cats or elephants or birds. Wherever there's life, there's a sacred part of the redwood trees, they help each other because they understand what they have in common. And bhakti, or spiritual perspective, begins with understanding who we are, who I am, and once we connect to that, we naturally understand what we all have in common. You cannot love God and not be a compassionate instrument to all beings. That's a principle. So Bhakti Fest is a time where we're like those redwood trees and we're extending our roots. The root of the tree is like the heart of the tree. We extend our hearts. We extend our respect. We extend our affection. We extend our compassion through our service. By our example, by our words, by our concern. And one of the most beautiful ways of doing that. There's a verse. Tatra tishta mi narada yatra gayanti varbhakta. That kirtan, the congregational chanting of these beautiful mantras and hymns, are ways in which when we sing together, with the proper understanding, that this beautiful kirtan process reconnects me with my own heart, reconnects me with Krishna, with God within my heart, and reconnects all of us together. If we have the proper approach, kirtan is like all of us through our hearts extending our roots to each other, to connect on a spiritual level, to help each other grow in whatever situation, and to spread that energy, that grace throughout the world. If all of us here at Bhakti Fest, just the people in this room, to speak of everyone else who's coming, if we really sincerely focus on the opportunity we have to put aside our egos and really unite our hearts, our roots, for this higher cause of love, of devotion, of compassion, we can make a great contribution to the spirituality and to the true happiness of all beings throughout the world. Sometimes we think, who am I? And what are we? The world's such a mess. What are we going to do about it? I said I was going to end with that story, but I'm going to tell it. In India, in Mumbai, this house is a living room, and in the living room there's a few couches, and I'm going to tell you about the couches. Back in the 1940s, some people, about six or seven people, sat on those couches, and they made a decision. Can I tell you? It's really nice. It was Mahatma Gandhi, Nehru, Sarojini Patel, and they decided the British Empire's most powerful empire on the planet, and they've subjugated India for over 200 years, and let's get them out and have an independent nation. That's what they discussed. And they were united. They did it. That's where it began. The amazing thing is that family kept the living room and the couches exactly as it was when Gandhiji and the others were sitting there making these decisions. It was their great-grandfather's house, the Birla house. They didn't have money. Strong will, and they were united in their cause. So little people could do big things. I remember one time I got malaria. And after I got malaria, I was really sick. How many of you have had malaria? Please raise your hand. Sorry. Anyway, I pray you never get malaria. But it's a miserable disease. You're practically on the verge of death. And how did I get it? I'm a mosquito. And what's my weight compared to a mosquito? I'm a light person. I know big people who get malaria. So little people could do big things. Does that make sense? A little mosquito could do so much. So when we're empowered by God's grace, we can do so much. So much beyond who we are or what we think we are. That's what gives life eternal purpose and meaning. It's not just a matter of what we achieve. It's a matter of what is our intent and how sincere we're trying. This beautiful opportunity to actually celebrate, not just, you know, feel depressed about all the things in the world, but to celebrate the goodness inherent within all of us and spread that, because there's no better way to solve the problems of the world than to actually learn to celebrate the goodness within ourselves and bring that goodness out in others. And as we chant together in these beautiful kirtans, we can have this prayer to be instruments of grace together, with one voice, with one heart, with one purpose, to connect with that love within us and transmit it everywhere and everywhere. Thank you very much. Should we have kirtan in the mood of the redwood forest?
Yes, yes.